Hello and welcome to another episode of Irreverent Testimony. It is Friday, February 19th, 2016. As usual, I am Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And if you are a new listener, welcome to the politically charged podcast from a leftward perspective by and for millennial and Gen Xer types. If you find my voice sounding a little raspy and hoarse, it's because I'm fighting a stupid cold that's being passed around the entire Denver population eight or nine times this season.
Seriously.
Which sucks. I had to do something earlier I call the nuclear option. Nothing to do with the Senate, but it's this concoction for my throat. So that I'll keep my voice and my throat won't hurt like hell, and I won't even tell you what's in it because it's horribly disgusting.
But did it work?
But did it work? It did. It worked reasonably well. So we got a lot to talk about. Tomorrow is the Nevada caucus and the South Carolina primary. Nevada for the Democrats, South Carolina for the Republicans.
Yes.
Very, very exciting. Yes. But we'll backtrack for a hot second. I had a music gig last night, so I was not able to watch the Democratic town hall thingamabobber.
Yeah.
It was in Nevada, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it was. Yep.
So, Rachel, why don't you fill us in a little bit on how that went?
So, it was kind of a different structure than we're used to. Bernie Sanders went up first, so they weren't on the stage together at any point. And the moderators, there was a guy from Univision and then Chuck Todd from MSNBC, or NBC, I guess. They asked some questions, but they also opened up the floor to audience members who asked questions.
They opened up a Pandora's box.
Yeah, they did. So Bernie went first. As usual, he was passionate and kept on message and was asked a couple of tough questions, but in the end, I think he did well. You know, I agree with him when he speaks, obviously. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a mixed room, to be honest. There were definitely Clinton supporters and definitely Bernie supporters.
Yeah.
Both of them got booed at various
points. Well, I emailed you because when the thing was starting and I was about to go on stage, I saw that Twitter was kind of blown up with grumpy Bernie supporters saying that it's all Hillary trolls and plants, which I take that with a grain of salt.
Anything
on Twitter.
Yeah, I did not get that impression at all.
Yeah.
There were definitely people during both his time on stage and her time on stage that identified themselves as the opposition supporters and asked them tough questions.
Okay.
But I felt like they were honest about it. There didn't seem to me to be any, gotcha questions.
Well, did you watch that Trump town hall thing with Morning Joe and Misha Barton or whatever her name
is? I did not, no.
Yeah.
But I don't even know when that was happening.
It was like Wednesday or...
Yeah, I didn't catch any of that. No.
Well, it was embarrassing for Trump. I mean, he really just knew nothing.
Yeah.
And just answered in just the most glib...
Trumpitudes.
Glib Trumpitudes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I wish you could have seen that to sort of compare and contrast. Not that you need to at this point, but I don't know that you've seen Trump yet in that town hall kind of forum where he's fielding questions.
Yeah.
Everybody was terrified of asking him questions, by the way.
They
were so scared, but, you know, he didn't blow up at anybody. But the questions weren't that tough either.
Yeah. So the kind of central focus of this town hall was definitely about immigration. That was the most asked about thing.
Sure.
I think in part because Univision was there and the
Jose
Latino.
Diaz-Balart,
yeah, exactly.
From my hometown of Miami. He used to be an anchor.
Yeah. He, I did not like the way he was speaking to Hillary Clinton, to be honest. But most of the questions had something to do with immigration, immigration reform, that kind of stuff. And partly because Nevada has a huge Latino Hispanic population. And also, I think, in part because it's not something they've talked a whole lot about, and that Univision was the co-sponsor of the debate. So Hillary was after Bernie. She was second. I thought she was tremendous. I also thought that she made a couple of not great statements. At one point, she was asked about Bernie Sanders, and she said basically he's really not a Democrat because he was an independent when
he
was a senator in
Vermont.
Right,
he just decided to be a Democrat when he ran for president.
Yeah,
which is misleading because he's been caucusing with the Democrats for decades.
I mean, I don't even know what that... She thinks that gets her saying that, and she got roundly booed about it.
In Nevada, it'll play to South Carolina, I think, a little better.
Maybe.
I said there's people that party affiliation is a bigger deal, especially to some African Americans in South Carolina.
But it felt really disingenuous. Like, what is she saying, that he's not liberal?
Oh, no, it's purely political.
Yeah, it didn't go over well. And he also got booed when he was talking about Bill Clinton and kind of making wishy-washy statements about whether or not Bill Clinton was a good president or not, and what he really did, he help black people and poor people and the Clintons sort of generally. And yeah, they both had some struggling moments. I think it's harder for them because it is the public asking them questions, that it's not, you know, kind of they're looking directly at the person asking them a question who is a potential constituent, rather than the sort of sea of faces that you get at a debate, right? You're just talking to the moderator and you don't really see the people. So I think that it was much more difficult for them. The questions, I have to say, were tremendous. The people that were asking them, they were nuanced, they were complicated, they were smart, academic questions that I really appreciated. And in fact, I think some of the questions were asked better than some of the moderators we've seen recently, particularly that last debate that we did the podcast with Arliss. These questions weren't surprising to me at all. Yeah, I mean, but they weren't like, how do you feel about abortion or something?
The moderators are just now clickbait personified.
Yeah, but these were like...
And actual people have more substantive questions.
They did.
Rather than gotcha clickbait, yeah, controversy TMZ questions.
Yeah, they were asking really specific policy questions about like the children from Central America who came over and the deportation process and whether or not they should have attorneys and how do both of them feel about that, or DACA or the Dreamers.
And you said Hillary was better with specific policy proposals than Bernie.
She was really, I mean, it's rough for me, but she really was on point. She had really specific policy answers about concrete things that she wants to do, that she thinks she can get accomplished, that make sense. Bernie went back to the message he says constantly, which is
everything goes back to the
1%. Back to the 1% and breaking up the banks and the economic inequality. And he really, I think he struggled on a lot of the immigration questions because he kept trying to bring it back to that economic message about Wall Street. And that's really not what this issue is about at all.
No, and I think it is a little condescending, too.
It is. Yeah.
You know, he doesn't realize that, and he's obviously not doing that on purpose.
No, but it did come across like he'd be asked a really specific policy question about immigration, and then he would pivot so quickly to economic inequality and Wall Street and the banks, and it was like, well, that is not an answer to that question, sir. And the audience
It's like what the Republicans do, and they start to semi-answer a question, and then just turn around and say, but Hillary and Obama are so terrible.
Yeah, and ISIS.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And, you know, she's accused him recently in the media of being a one-issue candidate, which I think is a little unfair, but
well,
I understand
if
what
she's
going to
have performances like that.
Yeah.
For full disclosure here, I'm a mostly decided Bernie supporter, and Rachel, is it fair to say, is a mostly decided Hillary supporter at this point?
Yeah.
But we're both in the camp, the internet, we're both in the camp of second choice. Either one of them would be perfectly delightful.
I love them both, to be honest. Like, the reason this is so hard for me is not because I don't like them.
Which kind of makes us the unicorn, it seems like.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's really the case. I just think that the most partisan people out there are the ones on Twitter and Facebook all the time.
Yeah, and they're obnoxious and they need to knock it the fuck off.
On both sides.
Yeah, exactly, right. Yeah,
it's really bad.
No, I really have struggled with my choice on Bernie or Hillary, but I find myself, after watching these kind of things and watching her speak and listening to what she is saying, I just think she is the most qualified, best president. And I think that sometimes the politics evades her a little bit. You know, her and Bill were doing 90s politics, and she struggled to kind of evolve that into modern day politics, and she's struggling with the younger voters, and I get all of that. I don't think that that means that Bernie would be a better president than she was, even if he wins, because of politics. I think she is the best person for the job. And if I'm asking myself what I wish people would do when they voted, I wish they would vote for the person they think is the best person for the job. And if that's the standard that I'm holding other people to, I should hold myself to that and vote for the person I think is best for the job. So that's why I'm going to vote for Hillary.
Okay. Oh, so you're officially declaring right now?
I think so,
You've made up your mind?
I think, yeah.
Wow.
I know.
Big news here on
the
radio, you guys, on the podcast.
Breaking. You heard it here first.
Rachel has made her official endorsement.
Yes,
you
I
won't
have.
See it on the front page of Politico.
Yeah, when I really get down to brass tacks, I think that's what I got to do. So,
well, there you go.
I will be in opposition to Dana in the same caucus room. He will be standing on the Bernie side, and I'll be standing on the Hillary side.
And I'll be in a completely different caucus room, caucusing for Bernie.
Yes.
Without trashing him. And this is why, the more I think about it, I thought I would just kind of go, but now I think I have to speak, especially if I need to tamp down some really...
Some
ugliness, if it arises.
Yeah, and I think, you know...
Tries to. Not that anybody's necessarily going to listen to me, but...
Well, you know. You're pretty persuasive.
I can be.
I'm really... I think it'll be interesting. I mean, you know, Dana and I going to the same room and standing on opposite sides, what's the point? But I want to caucus. I want to go stand up there for Hillary. Even if we lose, I don't care. I think it's the right thing to do.
On the second half of the show, I'm going to... as a Bernie supporter myself, other Bernie supporters... I'm going to lay some math out for you that's not very pretty, at least in the short term here, and you're going to have to live with it if you're interested in truth and reality and not just reading the clips and listening to the sound bites you want to hear about stuff.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that. Not that it's all doom and gloom, but, you know, right now, a lot of you have probably been buying into a false narrative that the media has portrayed after New Hampshire, which we saw coming. If you had listened to us, we kind of laid it out, like, let's not get too carried away here.
It's one state.
And some recent polling, and I think what you're going to see over the next 7 to 10 days is going to bear that out. But we'll see about that. Now, quickly, talking about the other side, it is just getting bizarre and surreal and crazy and ugly and horrifying with each passing day. I mean, people thought that the Karl Rove Whisper campaign against McCain was bad and that... Some of the stuff about going after Romney's Mormonism was kind of cheap and ugly. The Pope is fair game now.
Yeah, no, I mean...
In this election for the Republicans.
It's like living in an alternate reality sometimes for me.
Well, let's talk about that, right? Because it was just yesterday. It feels like 10 news cycles
ago already.
But it wasn't even 24 hours.
Yeah.
That somebody was interviewing Pope Francis... And asked about Trump's comments about building a wall, and he said something to the effect of a true Christian doesn't want to build a wall to keep people out and wants to build a bridge instead.
Yeah, anyone who's not building, who wants to build a wall instead of bridges is not a Christian.
Right, right. And so that was spun to say, Pope calls Trump not a Christian.
Yes.
Which is not exactly what he said.
No, and he didn't specifically say anything about Trump. It was just a comment. He was
general.
On the U.S.-Mexico border in Juarez, and he was looking kind of, you know, across the border and looking at Texas and looking at Mexico and said, you know, anyone who wants to build a wall instead of bridges is not a Christian. And, oh, my God, the world melted
down. He must be talking
down.
About Trump. And so Trump, in true Trump fashion, hit back just like it was Jeb, just like the Pope was Jeb Bush.
Yeah. He called the Pope disgraceful.
Yeah.
The Pope. Disgraceful. Like, you can't really do that,
He said, how dare... He basically said... I'm paraphrasing. But how dare he question my Christianity? How dare he say I'm not a nice guy? I'm a really nice guy. And what he said was disgraceful. Look, dude. I know this Pope isn't popular with a lot of the hard right evangelicals and super hard right types in this country. But if you want to win the nomination, let alone the presidency... There are a shit ton of Catholics in this country.
Yeah.
And even if they're not liberal or even moderate in their views, the Pope is God's secondhand man as far as they're concerned.
It's the Pope.
It's the Pope. You can't insult the Pope.
No.
You can't say what the Pope said was disgraceful.
Well, and he starts trolling the Pope on Twitter by sending all these... Literally, I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
Sending all these...
He lost his mind.
Yeah. All these pictures of the wall outside Vatican City, right? Sort of saying, like, if you need a wall, or if I don't get to have a wall, but you have a wall. And then he made this public comment saying that when ISIS comes...
You're going to wish
Donald Trump was president. And then, so that happened for like an entire day. And then today, he's kind of trying to walk it back. Yeah.
That's not all he's walking back, but he's walking back. Oh, no, Francis is a great guy.
Oh, I love him. He's a nice man. I don't like fighting with the Pope.
Yeah, I'm not going to fight with the Pope.
Why would I fight with the Pope?
No, it's great.
Yeah.
My comments were taken out of context.
The media,
you know, the same old shtick. And, which means that obviously, because I don't think that he, in retrospect, reined himself in. I'm sure somebody in his campaign is like, Dude, you can't rip on the Pope.
You cannot be running for president.
Rip on Jeb Bush and Lindsey Graham all you want.
Yeah.
You cannot slap the Pope around. I'm sorry.
Yes.
You just can't.
Right.
And
so this is the first time, really, I've ever seen Donald Trump kind of try to back down a little bit.
Well, that's not all he backed down on, because he also backed down on some of the hyperventilating over Bush cause 9/11 or Bush lied about 9/11.
Well, yeah, there's a whole other thing with that, right? So
yeah.
At the last debate, he made that comment, a couple of different comments about how, you know, George W. Bush's administration did not keep us safe because 9/11 happened on his watch.
Right.
And that they lied about weapons of mass destruction and that they got us into a war by lying, essentially. So then you were telling me today, who was it that was sort of twisting that and saying that he said...
Mark Sanford,
right, the Appalachian Trail
Mike
guy.
Sanford, who said, what is it, politicians need self-control and...
Yes.
And yes. A high moral ground. Or it's just like, oh my God.
So he's originally from South Carolina. He's no longer an elected official there, but he's a sort of talking head, at least on MSNBC. And I guess his endorsement matters in South Carolina.
He's not in Congress anymore. He was in Congress for a while.
He was, but then the Appalachian Trail thing happened, and I think he's
No,
gone.
That's when he was governor.
Oh, is he in Congress now?
I think he might be.
Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting. I think you're right, actually, that he ran for... But after everything settled down.
The point is, he was sort of this... If you don't, never heard of Mark Sanford, he was this very typical, Bible thumping, holier than thou Christian, very, very into restricting women's rights, yes. And you know, very abstinence only guy, and mm-hmm. the whole nine yards, right?
Yeah. Anti-gay.
Anti-gay. Yep. And like when he was coming to prominence as being maybe a presidential candidate, yeah. or this or that. This was in 2012 or before 2012, right?
Like 2010, I don't know the year, but yeah, it was several years ago.
Yeah, and it turned out he was having an affair with an Argentinian reporter, was she, or a writer
know.
Or something?
I don't remember exactly what her thing was, but he basically disappeared from his campaign, from his office for days.
Once word got out about the affair.
No, they didn't know where he was. His campaign staff, or his, not campaign, but his congressional staffers couldn't find him. And they were like looking everywhere and they're like, where is he? And he sent back an email that said, oh, I'm hiking the Appalachian Trail. And they were like, what? Like we're in the middle of session. Where are you? And then it came out that's why we joke about it.
So that's when he was in Congress or after he was governor?
Governor. I don't know. He was governor, I think. But anyway, yeah. So then it came out that no, in fact, he was in Argentina and had been flying there and flying this woman here for quite a bit.
Hanky-panky.
And then these love letters between the two of them came out that were very racy.
Very steamy.
And then he left his wife, right?
I don't remember what all came of that, but I remember the Argentinian lady dumped him at some point.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
I think so too. So anyway, this guy came out after the debate and then the last couple of days and said, got a little crazy and said that Donald Trump basically was accusing the Bush administration of being behind 9/11.
Right, right. He kind of twisted what Trump said into saying that he's a 9/11 truther, that him and Cheney bombed the World Trade Center.
Yeah. Which, not just that they knew that there was a potential attack.
Which Trump has never said anything like that.
No, no, no.
Trump has said a lot of crazy shit. To date, I don't think he's ever said anything even close to that.
No.
So Mark Sanford's full of shit.
Absolutely.
It's not like we're trying to defend Trump on any level.
No.
But
I mean, to be fair, though, he was not wrong when he said all of those things about
George. Oh, no,
George
but now
Bush,
he's even walking that back.
Yeah.
Because I think he's realizing, like, again, another staffer must have got hold of him and said, dude, beat up on Jeb all you want, even beat up on W, say the Iraq War was a mistake, but, like, you know, saying that the whole Bush family lied to get us into the Iraq War is maybe a step too far.
Running as a Republican, sir. Not a Democratic Republican.
Do you remember the whole Republican Party in Fox News circa the start of the war the way through the Obama presidency?
Yes.
When they would find some old rusty mustard gas canisters and say, see, we found the WMDs after all.
See, I wasn't
lying. It's like, okay, we went to war over old mustard gas. Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, Mark Sanford endorsed Ted Cruz today, which is gross, but whatever. Governor Nikki Haley endorsed Marco Rubio.
We'll get to Jeb in a second, but which was a devastating blow to the Bush campaign. Yeah. We're really, really counting on the Haley endorsement.
And especially like that establishment endorsement. That's what she kind of represents, and she gave it to Rubio, which, I mean, there's news out today, too, that the Bush is just melting down.
Well, we'll get to that. So there were stories out this morning. One was from Eric Erickson at redstate.com. Another from Politico that Jeb campaign is circling the drain and they may quit as soon as Sunday after the Saturday primaries. Now they're one or two of their spokes, they're out of money. Yeah. Everybody's had it.
They can't pay their staffers.
Jeb wants to go home, which we've been saying for months.
Totally.
But then a staffer did come out and say, no, it's all bullshit. We're in it for the long. I mean, they're going to say that.
Until he announces. Absolutely.
Yeah. But I mean, if not, there's a lot of leaks. And if it's true, and it might be, then God, I think those campaign people just want it to end worse than anybody.
Yeah.
At least the ones that are leaking this stuff.
Exactly. They've got quotes all over the place from all of these donors and close family, Politico, friends.
Politico's
like,
got this obvious agenda, right? They can't stand Hillary. They can't stand Jeb. Marco Rubio is just the god of gods as far as they're concerned. So many fawning Marco Rubio articles day after day after day after day.
About how he's really changing everything.
Yeah,
he's really going to get it this time.
He's
going to
get it this time. He's going to finish fourth, and that's revolution.
Still a first, really, if you look at it in a different way than numbers.
Yeah. But so, I'm really excited about tomorrow.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know if Jeb's actually. I think if Jeb finishes better than fourth, he'll try to stay in.
Yeah.
I think if he finishes fourth, unless it's like. He finishes fourth, like Rubio 12.5 and Jeb 12, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say, too. Yep.
But I don't see that happening. I mean, he's just getting hammered so hard. And he trotted out his brother to do campaign events. And
because the sort of Beltway narrative is that South Carolina is really about the military. There's a lot of military bases and installments and things there. And that's what Republican voters care about there.
Yeah,
so
the military
bring Bush
is not.
Out? Like, what?
The military vote is not necessarily that myopic, just like they talk about the black vote, that it's just this,
or women's votes,
this mindless, amorphous blob of voters who just bounce a certain way or another because of one thing or one issue.
Right.
Like, they're a little more sophisticated than
that. Right. Absolutely. And, you know, I don't see George W. Bush as being, like, the great hero of military families. Do you know what I mean? Like,
some, but not all.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of people that are injured and have all kinds of
and there was that whole scandal of not having the right body armor that Rumsfeld basically said suck it up
and then all the different tours that were, I forget the word that they used for it, it starts with an I, but that people were really having to go back before any
re-enlistment
other any other war they would not have had to go back in such a short amount of time and just the, you know, the kind of nature of the war in Iraq and Afghanistan with the IEDs and, you know, people losing limbs and having traumatic brain injury. And I just don't see George W. Bush as
being beloved by every military person down there.
Yeah.
Necessarily.
Right. So that was kind of just a flop. Did not help Jeb.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I don't think it's going to help him a lot.
I don't either.
But it could be even worse if not for W. I mean, who knows?
Yeah,
but,
that's true.
You know, the Beltway got very excited. Oh, look, W's out of hiding. Is this going to do anything? And we said no.
No.
And it doesn't look like it has. Now, the polling on whether some of the things Trump has said have affected him, it's really conflicting. You got some polls that say the needle hasn't really moved at all, and you have some that says it's affected him quite a bit. And now Trump or Rubio are making a move.
Yeah.
And it could be close. Now, every poll, literally every poll, still has Trump leading by anywhere from 3 to 15 points. Some of them show Rubio pushing for second. Most of them show Cruz close to second, maybe even pushing for first.
Yeah, there's that one poll that shows Cruz ahead by a couple points, but every other one has Trump still ahead. So.
Well, here's the thing about Cruz, right? Cruz has this campaign manager who is Lee Atwater and Karl Rove and Satan himself all rolled into one. He gets off on being the sleaziest, dirtiest campaigner. And that's not going to work everywhere, but in South Carolina, it seems to work like a charm.
Well, exactly right.
And God only knows what we're going to be hearing about, not just that has been going on this week, and we know some of it, but the dirty tricks tomorrow, I mean, they're going to stop at nothing.
Yes.
Like, we know that in Iowa, they said Ben Carson was dropping out, so caucus for us.
Yep. They sent out those mailers.
Well, the blood is already in the water for Jeb, so they could say Jeb's dropping out, vote for us, but those would probably more go to Rubio than Cruz, I would think.
So Carson, definitely, I think the reason they targeted him is that they're going for that evangelical vote, especially in Iowa.
Yeah.
That it would make sense
Maybe
to
they'll
me.
Just do it again. Maybe South Carolinians are so dumb that They won't even remember.
Well, and remember, South Carolina is sort of notorious for being like the meanest primary state.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
you can get away with murder down there.
No, they like kind of eat it up. Yeah. They almost reward it.
Yeah. So like the back in, what, 2008?
No, 2000. You're talking about 2000 with McCain, where the robocalls mm-hmm. about his biracial daughter and then yeah. he lied about
Did
his war record.
Did you know he had a black daughter? Yeah. And like an out of wedlock black daughter and like all kinds of
and
crazy
that seemed to
antics.
Work?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the worst part of it?
Well, exactly. Looking at you, South Carolina. So
I try not to.
Yeah. So I think it'll be really interesting. I think Trump will win. I think Cruz will come in second. Now, again, given the antics that go on tomorrow, who knows? But the polls open at...
Well, everybody wants Rubio to come in a strong third or second. Even the liberal, quote, liberal media... They're just fascinated with Marco Rubio. I don't know if it's his dreamy eyes or his robotic repetition or...
I don't know either. He's not Ted Cruz or Donald Trump.
His stylish stripper boots. I
mean,
don't know.
Ted Cruz is roundly hated, right? He's just sort of the
Yeah, I guess Rubio's
the
next
that,
tolerable choice that yeah. might actually beat Trump.
Yeah.
So they're all coalescing around him.
Yeah.
Like, what's the show with Mark Halperin and the other dude? And they do the circus? No, mm-hmm. the one on MSNBC.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. I mean, every day this week I've caught a little bit of it. Every day, like, who won the day? Oh, by far, Marco Rubio. He is friggin' killing it. He's going to completely change the direction of this race. And I don't know if they're being sarcastic. I don't think so.
No, I don't think
but
so.
But every day, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, who won the week? Oh, that's so easy. Marco freaking Rubio. And they can't say enough wonderful things about how amazing Marco Rubio is doing in South Carolina, so maybe they know something we don't, and maybe Rubio will do really, really well there tomorrow. I mean, it's possible.
I doubt it.
The polling still says he's stuck in a pretty solid third, significantly behind Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
And Cruz is going to pull out all the dirty tricks in the stops.
But
so.
He's pretty close to Jeb from some of the polls that I was looking at.
Yeah,
right?
there's a couple. Well, most show Jeb pretty far down the line. That's why, you know, all these articles we've seen about Jeb dropping out looked feasible. I think I only saw one or two polls where it showed him within a point or two of Rubio. Most others, he's down 5 or 6 points.
Okay.
Like, single digits.
Yeah.
Which, how do you possibly continue? If you come in single digits in South Carolina and fourth,
yeah,
that's it for Jeb.
I agree.
There's no way possible
no,
that
I
he
totally
can convince
agree.
Any donors to keep supporting him, and they'll all go to
yeah.
Rubio.
And that's exactly what they're waiting for, according to Politico, at least, that these people are really waiting to be sort of let off the hook from the Jeb show and start putting their support behind Rubio. So they're almost like hoping he does really bad in South Carolina.
Yeah, and what the Rubio campaign is excited about and the Beltway Press is that you see some of these head-to-head polls in the GOP primary. If everybody else dropped out and it was just Rubio and Trump, it shows Rubio ahead.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily matter when you're talking about delegate counts, mm-hmm. especially as we get into let's assume Bush stays in, right?
Yep.
And we know Cruz ain't going anywhere.
Yep.
And Carson may stay in.
Carson is so irrelevant at this point.
Kasich is going to hang in for a little while longer,
I think so.
At least through Super Tuesday and probably beyond.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not in that position where the big money delegate states are coming up yet.
No.
To where it's just going to be Rubio v. Trump.
Right.
So where is he going to jump out to this huge delegate advantage?
Well, what like we've been talking about for months now, the longer that these candidates stay in,
the better for Trump.
The better for Trump. That's how he wins, is if he can get them to all stay in. Because as soon as they start dropping out, that support's going to go to either Cruz or Rubio, I think.
And he knows it.
And then they're going to beat Trump.
And if he was smarter, he'd probably back off Jeb a little bit. But I think he just enjoys it so
he
much
does.
He can't
such
help
a bully.
Himself.
Oh my God. And Jeb's such an easy target.
I know. He cannot help himself. Even if his handlers are saying, you really should back off Jeb. We need him to stay in the race. I can't help it, guys.
I also saw him on TV today, and he just looks so beaten down, Jeb.
He looks exhausted. He looks depressed.
Yes.
He looks
like
gray
almost. Like, he's just very, just like, get me the fuck out of this race already.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm tired of getting beat up. I'm not going to win. I'm not as good as my brother, whatever. Like, I just want to go home and lick my wounds.
I just want to go home to Miami.
And just, like, go play on the beach and not deal with these people anymore.
Bush is Jeb's a Miami guy. He was basically my neighbor. I went to kindergarten with his kid.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a Miami dude. He likes going to football games, wearing his flip-flops, going to the beach. And he's had to, like, trudge through the snow in Iowa and New Hampshire.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to do this, man.
No, and just get beat up. I mean, just mercilessly beat up.
Yeah, with no good comeback except for stop picking on me and my family.
That's
basically
mean. Don't talk about my mom and dad that way. Yeah, I mean, he's just not cut out for this. He's
I
just
almost
not.
Feel bad for him.
Yeah.
If not for the fact I know him and he's a, in many ways, just a horrible, entitled, yeah. rich jagoff.
I mean, you can tell his, the level of entitlement when you watch him talk because...
Oh, I've seen it live. He spoke at my sister's high school graduation.
Right. I mean...
He basically said it's good to be an entitled, rich, white guy.
Yeah.
Embrace it.
He almost looks shocked every time someone attacks him as though, like, that's never happened to him before. Like, he's just sort of like, wait a minute. Not in this way. I'm Jeb Bush. Not, you can't... That's not a thing that can happen to me.
Not in this way.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen his two gubernatorial races down in Florida. Actually, the first one he lost, and then he won, and then he won re-election. And the one he lost, he actually picked up. It was Lawton Chiles is the Democratic governor of Florida he lost to. This was back in 96, I want to say. And he was very magnanimous and very, you know, very, you know, he didn't. It was very close and he didn't scream about recalls. He shook Lawton Chiles' hands. He said, good campaign, you know, good luck. And he was very smart to do that because he got a lot of. Support and sympathy from that, and then he went on to be the twice elected governor. So this
are
is not
term limited down there.
Yeah, 2 terms.
Okay,
I think. I think that's 2 terms.
We are here,
but I think that's recent too. But anyway, you know, the point is, this is obviously not Jeb's style.
No,
to go into a war with somebody like Trump.
I mean, I don't think he ever expected to. Who saw this coming?
No.
When Jeb Bush decided to run for president...
He wouldn't have been attacked like this.
He never imagined it would be against fucking Donald Trump and that would be a serious person that would be the front runner of he had no idea what he was getting
into. It's not like Trump has really attacked him from the right a little bit on immigration. Trump has actually, ironically, attacked him from the left,
yes.
which I don't think... anybody in the Bush campaign anticipated.
No.
But moreover, he's just attacked him as being weak and dull and lifeless and not up to the job, which he's right about.
Yeah,
and I think that's what pisses off Jeb the most.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if a bully is bullying you and calling you fat and you're not really fat or you don't think you're fat or saying that you're stupid and you're not, then it sort of just rolls off your back and you're like, this person's an idiot. But when a bully knows and presses your buttons...
Like all good bullies do.
That all good bullies do.
Uh-huh.
It really gets under your skin.
Because he's right.
Because Trump, you know, say what you want, he's a shrewd businessman. And if he gets in a room with somebody he can eat alive, he smells blood in the water.
He can smell it, yeah,
and he goes
absolutely.
For it. And he got in there with Jeb. And he said, this guy's not up to the task. You know, he's weak, at least in the sense of... You know, Trump the shark.
Yep.
And
totally.
And he called him out on it, and Jeb just got so flustered with it that he
every
proved
time.
Him right.
Yeah, every time. He just looks like,
he's low energy.
What? Yeah.
And then you see him on the campaign trail. He's like, shit, this guy's right.
Yeah, he is right. I mean, he's an asshole, but he's right. And, you know, I think it's interesting because Jeb is really not carrying any significant numbers in a way that would be threatening to Trump. I think it goes back to what you were saying earlier, that he just likes it. He's just a fucking bully, and he likes to bully the weak sauce establishment guy, the Bush, because it's fun. It's just sport. You know, it's not like he's gaining anything from it in terms of numbers.
Right.
Maybe more people like him, but not Bush supporters aren't going to go. You know what I mean? So it's fascinating to watch, and it is really...
Well, I think it's going to get much tougher for Trump if things get tighter. Because if Trump is, I think, is going to win tomorrow, but I think it's going to be a little tighter than they expected. And if it is tight, if it's just 3 or 4 points, and Cruz is right at his heels, the media is really going to frame that basically as a Cruz win and that Trump's unraveling.
Yep.
And I don't know how Trump's going to handle that.
Well, yeah, the last time he lost anything, we were like, "Wow, he's so magnanimous." And then the next day, he melted down completely. I mean, just. Lost it.
Yeah, he threw a fit, and he's already hates Cruz.
Yeah.
So you know that Cruz is going to pull all kinds of shenanigans.
Yeah.
So it could be really crazy on Sunday, unless Trump just crushes it and wins by 13, 15 points.
Yeah.
Then he won't necessarily have to. That doesn't mean he won't. But he'll have that momentum going into these other southern states coming up where he's got – Trump has big, big leads right now.
Yeah.
But – that's the thing. It's like half of me obviously wants Trump to just keep coasting to the nomination.
Yeah.
And half of me just can't wait to see what happens if it falls apart and the nuclear meltdown that will ensue.
Seriously.
Because Trump is not going to bow out and endorse somebody.
No. And in fact, this is another little point to that, which was so Ted Cruz put out this campaign commercial. And it's showing old, from like the 90s, Donald Trump being interviewed about being pro-choice.
Yeah.
And he says, like, I'm very pro-choice. Like, I would not ban partial birth abortions. I'm pro-choice. And so Ted Cruz puts this in a campaign ad in South Carolina. And I think actually nationally, but specifically in South Carolina. And Donald Trump threatened to sue him and put a cease and desist order on the video saying that it was...
libelous?
Yeah. Which is like, I'm literally watching you say it, dude. You can say you changed your mind, but that is literally you saying the words
and
out loud.
Well, and Cruz literally just laughed and said,
bring
you know,
it
by
on.
All means,
do it.
Sue
Fine.
Me.
It'd
be
care.
The most frivolous law. It's like one of the rare times I had to be like, he's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's
and Cruz
just ridiculous.
Is a smart, he's a lawyer. He's a smart guy.
Right, and then Trump even had to walk that back. Well, you know, we might sue.
We might just sue. He's not going to stop. You said it. You don't agree with yourself, or you're at least claiming you don't
look,
now.
Look, you're starting to see the cracks in the armor, and it is slowly but surely wearing thin on certain people Trump would need if he actually is going to go all the way to the nomination,
yeah.
and let alone the presidency, right?
Ugh, yes.
Like, you can't call the Pope an asshole,
right.
you know. You can't threaten to sue every time a negative ad runs against you. I mean,
that is actually factual.
I mean, 2 months ago it was fine and it was funny and it rolled off of people's back who were kind of fascinated by this and
yeah.
maybe even his supporters. But it's like the more and more the man really does. I mean, Sanford's actually right. It comes from a completely hypocritical place, but the guy's got no self-control.
Correct.
So,
correct.
You know,
yeah, he's completely a loose cannon. Completely. And if I think you're right, if he starts to lose, or even it gets close and then he starts to lose, it's going to be epic.
Well, he'll either threaten to run third party
yep.
or he'll just...
He already has.
He'll burn it down or
he
he'll...
said literally like if, you know, all bets are off now because I told you I wouldn't run as a third party candidate as long as I was treated fairly by the Republican Party.
It's a little
party.
Complicated. It's not as easy though as he is making it out to be.
Oh, I'm sure it's not, but he
yeah.
doesn't care or know that. You know what I mean? He doesn't know anything. But... Barack Obama was asked about whether or not Donald Trump he could see winning the nomination, and he
and Barack Obama
dodged
being
it.
An excellent troll. No, he didn't dodge it.
Well, he said, "I can't imagine him becoming the president."
Right.
Not
the nominee.
The nominee.
Oh no, of course not. You'd love for him to be the nominee.
Everybody would on our side, right?
Him or Cruz.
Yeah, and then Rachel Maddow did an interview with Vice President Joe Biden last night, also, and asked him because he's Catholic, right, about the Pope. And Donald Trump, and he was very funny. And he said, well, if I'm weighing the Pope and Donald Trump, it's a very easy answer for me. And
yeah,
then
he kind of did the thing with his
he
hands.
He did, yeah,
we
the weighing
the Pope,
one or the other. Sort of,
Trump.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, this is not
a really,
tough call.
Yeah, exactly. And then Maddow kind of pushed him on whether or not he thought he could that Trump could win the nomination. And he said, I don't think you should discount him.
Yeah.
That, like, I agree with Obama, he's never going to be the president, but that, you know, he has a real shot at the nomination. So... It's getting crazy, and we will definitely be bringing you all the news about what actually happens.
We're going to be live
tomorrow.
Casting tomorrow. We'll give you all
yeah.
the details of that before,
yeah.
but we're going to take a break real quick, and when we come back, I'm going to talk about some Bernie math trouble with the primaries that are coming up on the schedule. So I know if you're a Bernie supporter like me, you may not want to hear it, but if you want to have an idea of what's happening, you probably should.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to get it from the mainstream media because it's not as fun a story
yeah.
as the Clinton campaign collapsing and
yes.
Bernie ascending into unreachable heights.
Correct.
So hold on a quick second for us. And we'll be right back.
Dedicated going out to everybody here in Bahama Bay in Philadelphia. Here we go now, check it out. Yeah, rock to the rhythm of the funky vibe, so I can get busy just one more time to the beat. And you don't quit. It's that old school rap with that new school hit. Beat a pipe and pick a pimp up a cool rap to rock, and I can still rip up the house. Every goddamn time I get on the mic, I go crazy. Peace out to CeeLo Flex and Doug Lazy. I bet you never knew, but now you know I'm the undisputed king of this disco.
Hello and welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. We are just hours away from the Republican South Carolina primary and Nevada Democratic caucus. And so let's talk a little bit about this, backtracking a little. We had on the Democratic side, because I think we've talked about the Republicans enough.
Yeah.
For one lifetime. You had Iowa. It looked like Clinton was going to pull it out by a few points when Bernie made a late surge, and that basically turned into a statistical dead heat, a tie.
Yes.
Technically, Clinton won, but in terms of appropriating delegates, not counting the superdelegates, which is a whole other thing I'm not really going to get into unless you want to, Rachel.
No.
As far as appropriating delegates, it was basically, you know, exactly the same, 50-50 split.
Sure. So just really quick to kind of give like a little primer, we've talked about primaries and caucuses ad nauseum, but the way that you win the nomination for president for your party is by getting a certain number of delegates. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a percentage of the popular vote or mm-hmm. percentage of the vote for the states or anything like that. It's about the delegates and how many there are per state, and that is determined certainly by the vote and how many what percentage you get, but it's a little more complicated sort of than like, just a straight up and down vote.
Right, sort of like to win the presidential election, you have to win the quote electoral college.
Right. Which everyone knows and
is arcane and weird. And I remember my eighth grade civics teacher saying, oh, by the time you vote, this will be long gone.
Yeah.
Because it just doesn't make any sense.
Well, and it generally doesn't make any difference either. Now, there are certainly historical times that I've bore you all with.
Bush v. Gore.
Sure. There's also one in the 1800s, and it had to do with the Spanish-American War. I can bore you, but I won't. Anyway, so that's what we're doing. We're talking about delegates. These are people that basically are going to represent the voters mm-hmm. at the convention and elect our nominee.
Okay, so first let's talk a little politics, and then I'm going to talk a little delegate math with what we got coming up, and I will compare and contrast because this is important. So if you paid a little bit of attention, and certainly if you've been watching like MSNBC and reading the political sites and certainly reading social media, you had a virtual tie in Iowa, which is basically a win for Sanders.
Uh-huh.
And then you had a big Sanders win in New Hampshire, mm-hmm. which was a big win for Sanders.
Yeah.
And so all the headlines were Clinton campaign in disarray, Clinton campaign panicking. Oh, mm-hmm. my God, it's 2008 all over again. It's all going down the drain.
She's
going
to lose to another outsider.
Another outsider. Yep. Bernie is surging. It's just the year that everybody hates the establishment. The Clintons are losing their mind. She can't believe it's happening again. She's having night terrors. And then
she's going to fire her whole staff.
She's going to fire her whole staff.
Bill Clinton
she's gonna,
is attacking everyone now in defense
gonna
of her.
She's going to commit seppuku. I mean, it was just out of control. And then, like, you watched her consolation speech.
Uh-huh.
Not consolation. What's the word I'm looking for?
Yeah.
No.
You know what we mean. The one where she's like, sorry, I lost.
No, this is embarrassing. We need to think what the word is, Rachel,
Give
for
me a
God's
second.
Sake.
Give me a second. I know.
Concession speech.
Jesus.
H. Christ. I
have
an excuse. No, well, you've had a couple glasses of wine.
That's true.
I'm sick. Rachel's had a few glasses of wine. Forgive us. But you saw her concession speech, and then you saw her stump speeches, and you're like, she doesn't sound like she's coming off the rails to me. And then you saw the next debate, and you're like, she sounds like she's in control.
Yeah.
I don't know what all this is about.
Uh-huh.
And then you looked at some of the polling to that point in places like South Carolina and also the other states that are coming up for Super Tuesday in the South, and Hillary's got big leads. Now, the wisdom was, well, that's all going to disappear because there's all this Bernie momentum mm-hmm. and the Clinton campaign is spiraling out of control. Well, it's not really happening. Now, here's some more politics first. We have Nevada tomorrow for the Democrats.
Yes.
And it's always really hard to poll Nevada. It's just a weird place to poll. And B, it's a caucus.
Yep.
So polling for a caucus is just virtually impossible. You can get a roundabout idea of how people are doing, but it's still just really, really hard to do.
Yes.
A lot of things can happen. There's a lot of things in motion. You know, you could have really talented campaign leaders go to all of these caucus sites and have a strategy and a plan and mm-hmm. sometimes even do, quote, dirty tricks and have people posing as this being on one side and then, like, loading it up at the end. And there's all kinds of crap that can happen at a caucus.
And because Nevada, the Democratic Party, the DNC, has decided that you're able to register the day of the caucus,
yeah,
that's tended to benefit Bernie.
Right.
Because people who aren't maybe as organized, that kind of thing, can
possibly
just show
some
up.
Republican shenanigans, but I don't think you're going to see too much of that.
Yeah, I don't either.
But there's no way we'll know.
Right. But yeah, I think for some of the people who maybe are not regular voters or their first time voters, that kind of thing, that's tended to benefit Bernie. So it'll be really interesting. Right now, the polls say that they're basically in a dead heat, though. Yeah.
Right. And Bernie has to win tomorrow.
Yes.
And I really don't know who's going to win. Clinton has a long standing base of support there for a long time, but Bernie's made a lot of inroads. He's doing well. Although a lot of the big unions out there haven't sort of publicly taken a stance, he seems to have made more inroads with them recently. That's the sense I get. Although Hillary's really good talking to a lot of Hispanic voters out there. Mm-hmm. There's not a ton of young voters in Nevada.
Yeah. And I heard a really interesting thing that most, like 50% or something of Nevada voters aren't from Nevada, right? They're from other states.
California
and surrounding areas. Yeah, yeah. So I think that's kind of a weird fact about the state, I guess.
So I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but Bernie has to win, and I'm going to tell you why. Bernie, his campaign is really, really counting on this momentum. And the momentum of being able to say that we essentially won the first three, even though they didn't technically win Iowa, is absolutely necessary, because this is what happens when we move into March 1st, Super Tuesday, right? So on March 1st, we have the following
12 states, I think it is, right?
Yeah.
That vote. And it's either primaries or caucuses. But the
Here's the list.
Okay. Go ahead.
We have Alabama, Alaska for Republicans, American Samoa, Arkansas, Colorado. That's us. Yay. I don't know what this means. No preference vote for Republicans. I don't know what that means.
Nope.
A broad party run primary, whatever that means.
So that's people who don't live in.
Expats?
Yeah.
Okay. Georgia, Massachusetts, Minnesota, a caucus, North Dakota, Republican caucus, then Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Vermont, Virginia, and Wyoming Republican caucuses. That is a big, big day, and you have, I don't have the total in front of me, but something like 865 delegates are up for grabs. Now, here's the problem if you're Bernie Sanders, because now polls can change, and if he wins tomorrow, things can change, but here's the polling as of right now. Right? So, what is the first one on the list? Sweet Home Alabama. So, what do we got in Alabama? It's not on this list. But what do we have in Arkansas? Hillary Clinton's home state, she's going to crush it, right?
Yeah.
The latest polls there show her winning 57-32, 25%. So, she'll pick up a big, favorability there. Now, let's see what else we got.
Colorado.
Again, don't think we have polling for. So this isn't going to be as effective as I would have hoped. But
Georgia.
Georgia. Is Georgia?
Yep.
Yeah, Georgia's on that day.
Yep. She's so how about Georgia? Kill it there, I would imagine.
Yeah. Georgia, latest polling, she's leading by 34. And a good, reputable poll that just came out a couple days ago.
Yeah.
So
60 to 26. She's going to kill it.
She's going to kill it there. And that's a lot of delegates.
Also, we should mention South Carolina before Super Tuesday even happens. She's going to murder in South Carolina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Massachusetts. Now, that'll probably be Bernie country, certainly, but not by a ton.
Nope.
He's only up by about 7 in the latest, again, a really solid PPP poll that... is very heavily weighted. Clinton was actually leading big, but these are really old. So Sanders is leading in Massachusetts. That's good for him, but not by much.
Not
so he's not going to clean up.
Right, just in terms of delegates, because the Democratic Party does it proportionally.
Right.
You take a section of the delegates based on the percentage of the vote that you won.
And we'll get into what the Republicans are doing later, which is weird.
Yeah, but so even if they're basically virtually tied there, but she's just swung through the South and taken most of those, she gets most of those delegates and then half of his from the states where he wins.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the closer it is in each state, the closer in delegate count they're going to be, right? So that's kind of where we're sitting.
Now, you also got Oklahoma, smaller delegate count, but she's leading. She was leading by much more earlier. It looks like Sanders has caught up, but she still has a slim lead, so the best he can hope for is close to a tie there, it looks like.
What about Texas?
What about Texas? I lost my place. Sorry.
It's okay.
Let's take a look. Yeah, Texas is on Archer's. And the latest polling shows Clinton 23.
Oh my God, she's slaying. Yeah.
That is a ton of delegates.
Right. They have a ton of delegates in Texas because they have a huge population.
So let's just do a couple more if I can find them here for the March 1st primaries.
Tennessee, I think, is one. Yep.
Looks Tennessee. Like Clinton
has
plus
it.
26.
Yep. Yep.
And again, this is polling that just came out a couple days ago by PPP. So,
which is public policy polling.
Public
which
policy
is a,
polling.
Yeah.
Very reputable pollster.
Yeah.
What else we got? We looked at Texas. We looked at Oklahoma, Massachusetts, Georgia. How about Virginia?
How about Virginia? That'll be an interesting one. It's so in the South.
Yeah. What do we got? Clinton 22. So look, I would love to believe in Bernie Mentum. I'm excited about Bernie Sanders. I want a caucus for Bernie Sanders. I hope Bernie Sanders really makes this a good, long, tough fight and pulls Clinton to the left and brings these ideals forward and gets people excited.
Me too.
But come March 1st, unless there's a huge sea change, I mean, you know, even if he does win Nevada in a close matchup, remember, Clinton talked about her sort of southern firewall with African-American voters and people of color and...
That it appears that's holding.
That seems to be holding.
Yes.
It seems to be holding really strongly. And it's really interesting that these polls came out a few days ago by a reputable firm and they're not really being talked about.
Nope.
Because it goes against the fun, super fun narrative that the Clinton campaign is falling apart and Bernie is taken off.
And it's not really true. Now, once we get into the Northeast, I think he'll do much better.
Right.
But anywhere in the South, in the Midwest, I think she kills. I think she wins every state.
Right. Well, the next big day, huge day, is March 15th. So you want to look ahead to March 15th real
quick? I do,
quick?
Because there's some really big states like Florida, for example, that have really big delegate counts. So they're looking at hundreds and hundreds
but
of delegates.
This far out, almost a month out.
It's going to be really hard to tell,
Yeah, you can change. But for the sake of argument, let's look at where the latest polling is.
For Florida particularly, because they have
Florida,
a huge delegate count.
Clinton's got a big advantage. Clinton plus 17 in the most recent poll.
Yep.
But... You know, that was dropping.
She had 36 points and now she's got 17. So,
and that was already
a
few weeks ago. So he could be catching up there.
Yeah.
But that's another huge one.
Mm-hmm.
Huge one.
Huge.
North Carolina, where I know Clinton's got huge leads.
Yeah.
The latest polling, 15.
Yeah.
So, okay, not out of control. 15
well,
17, and 17
from PPP,
So he is starting to make inroads there, too.
So it's possible. I mean, we are not saying that Bernie could not win every state.
No, I'm not
saying that. It's just the math is hard.
Well, let's look at Ohio.
Yeah, Ohio is another really big one because it's such a swing state. They've got Clinton leading by 16 points.
That's already a month old, though.
Yeah.
So you know, we'll have to revisit that one. But that was a big, big sample. It's not very heavily weighted for some reason, though, by 538. So I guess he's not too crazy about this poll, probably because it's so old now.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's good in Ohio. And then just some of the sooner ones. Let's look at Michigan. That's a big one, too. Michigan,
and that one's
right
coming
now,
out on March 8th.
March
8th. So that one's big.
And the latest polling, Clinton plus 10. So, look, guys, you show me. You show me the math where after we get into mid-March, unless there's some huge Bernie surge, that besides his big win in New Hampshire and all the... You know, all the media storylines that have come out about him surging and her falling apart, right now the public, at least in these big, big delegate rich states that are coming up, they're just not buying it.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't include Vermont, where Bernie's literally leading by like 78 points.
Well, yeah, of course. Of course.
Unfortunately, it's a very, very small delegate count.
Yeah. So. I mean, Clinton's going to take New York. That's where she was the senator. She was a very loved senator there. She'll take Arkansas.
You would think.
Because that's where she's from also. So of course Bernie's going to take Vermont. They've elected him for the last 30 years to Senate. Obviously they're going to vote for him for president. But
yeah, and everything else is way too far out to even really...
Yeah, there's not enough.
Like, there's polling for Wisconsin, but that's... Wisconsin is so far out, it's not even worth looking at.
Yeah.
So, here's my point, guys. And we kind of called it. I did get a little carried away for a hot minute after New Hampshire and said, well, you know, maybe Clinton will go in the spiral. But then I calmed down. I thought about it. I said, you know, I don't know if this narrative's going to hold up. And right now, unless something dramatic happens in the next 10 days,
yeah,
like a subpoena comes down, an indictment comes down from the FBI, which my friend Raul and Fox News think will happen, but nobody else will. Or unless she says something crazy.
Or he wins Nevada the same way he won New Hampshire, and then he gets close in South Carolina or something.
No, he's not going to. If he wins, it's going to be a squeaker. And I'm saying, not going to win South Carolina.
Unless those things happen, I don't see her not staying in the lead in those southern states, at least.
So, just looking at the calendar, come March 15th, she's going to have this huge delegate lead.
Yeah.
You will no longer be able to spin that narrative that her campaign's falling apart and that Bernie's taken over. So where's the angle, guys? I mean, tell me. I'm a Bernie supporter. Yeah. And I want to hear, short of Clinton gets indicted for emails, which I guess she'll have to share a cell with Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice, too.
Yep.
What's going to slow this train down?
How is he going to make up for the pretty large margins she has in the South? How?
Now, here's what his advantage is. Let's say, for the sake of argument, he does do well in Nevada and better than expected in South Carolina. And he has enough momentum going into Super Tuesday and then the 5th and the 6th and the 8th to where he's able to not win but close those margins.
Yeah.
Maybe where it's like 20 points down to 10 or 5 points.
Yeah.
And Clinton wins, but she doesn't run away with it.
And they share delegates, essentially. Well, this is what I'm saying. So he's only a few delegates off.
This is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. If he's able to close those margins and not overtake her, but hold on, then the delegates are proportionally, he's not just blown out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
And then if he can make a late run when we get into the 15th in Florida and Illinois, in Ohio, in Arizona,
Wisconsin, I think he'll do well.
Washington, Wisconsin.
And then New York, maybe he'll do well. But then, Tuesday, April 26th, Connecticut, Delaware, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island.
Those are all big for Bernie, but they're not huge.
But that's the middle of April. That's the end of April.
That's the end of April. He could already be trounced, and the math could already be daunting for him. But, you know, we're still counting big states in May. We got Indiana.
I mean, California, West Virginia, doesn't Oregon. Even go until June, right? Yeah, California goes June 7th, and they have the most delegates of any state.
They do, and New Jersey's a huge one, too. Granted, New Mexico's fairly big, but if these projections hold up, I mean...
We may come down to the convention, to be honest. It may come down to the convention and superdelegates and a fight on the floor for the nomination if they're that close. It may very well.
It might be, but this means that he's going to have to upend a lot of things here in the next few days.
Yes.
And I'm just not sure that's going to happen because...
Well, certainly to your point, the narrative is going to change.
Oh, yeah.
That she's falling apart and he's going to run away with it when she wins... half the states on Super Tuesday or most of them.
And will they finally spin it to the resilience of Hillary Clinton? She had the email scandal and she disappointed in Iowa and New Hampshire and she's been
back.
So maligned in the 13-hour Benghazi. And look, because the media likes a story.
Yes.
And they really, really like a Clinton falling apart story.
Yes.
They might equally like a Clinton rebound story. So at Bernie supporters, they're going to melt down when that happens.
Yeah.
But get ready for it. That's just how the media operates.
I hope it doesn't become ugly.
I don't know. See, that's the thing. And we're going to have to cross that bridge when we get to it. We need those youngsters to stay involved and show up. And they're going to be disappointed once they start looking at the same math I'm looking at. Because I know they're not. They just don't want to deal with it right now.
Well, they don't really understand, I think, a lot of people who aren't involved in the process for a long time.
They're just hopeful that it's all going to turn around all of a sudden.
Yeah.
That, polls in South Carolina are wrong.
Yep.
The polls in Georgia and North Carolina, they're wrong. We're going to do better than expected. Yeah. We're going to, you know, and I don't think it's going to happen, guys. I mean, the Clinton campaign had the same wishful thinking in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Where the poll said where it was going to go. It's exactly where it went. Yep. And, you know, they moved on from there. So.
Yeah. Sorry, Bernie, guys. I love him, too, but
Now it doesn't look good.
No, it doesn't look math-wise.
The math doesn't add up.
His momentum's great. He's great. His message is great. But the math isn't really on your side on this one. At least for the moment.
It could change. But as it stands right now, March 1st is here in 9 days?
Yeah.
7, 8, 9, 10. Sorry, 11 days. My math sucks, too. So
it's a leap year, and, you know.
Yeah, it's a leap year. That's right. Mm-hmm. I forgot. So 11 days is not a long time, guys. I think come 11 days, if these polls don't shift dramatically, Hillary is going to crush it on March 1st.
Yeah.
And we will be caucusing, and Pierre, who initially started this podcast with me, is going to be running Mission Control that night, and we're going to be trying to Skype in live and giving you updates and, of course, talking about how everything's going down. But it could, the way it looks now, it's going to be a ginormously huge night for Hillary.
Yeah, I think so.
And I don't want to say the knockout blow, but it will be a huge step forward in taking a commanding lead unless things change. And I'm not saying they won't change. They could change. Anything could happen in the next few days. Bloomberg could get in the race. Biden could wake up tomorrow and say, you know what? Fuck it. I'm doing this.
Donald Trump can become a third party candidate. Yeah,
I mean, much can happen. Hillary could get indicted. Yeah. It's not out of the realm of total impossibility, I suppose.
Donald Trump could actually smack Jeb Bush up the face. I mean, who knows?
Lots of things could happen. You know, Bernie could lose his mind and start shouting the N-word or something. I don't think that's going to happen.
No,
it wouldn't be Bernie. It would be Fox News.
Yeah.
I mean, or Bill could say something really offensive on the campaign trail.
Yeah, he's been coming out for Hillary and kind of really pumping that 90s style politicking and refuses to say Bernie Sanders' name because you don't want to name your opponent because that gives them blah blah blah, and you're like, come on, it's the area, it's social media. Now.
Yeah, the point
like,
is,
it's done.
The point is, lots can happen.
Yes, right? Lots can happen. Yeah, right. Yes.
So, don't count necessarily anything out. Don't take these polls, verbatim, just because right now polls can swing in a wild hurry.
Yeah,
not as much on the Democratic side, but it can happen.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, let's explain why it gets really weird on the Republican side, just in terms of the delegate math, before we go.
So, Republicans have restructured this since 2008, that they have proportional representation, which means that the percentage of the delegate, the percentage of the vote that you get determines how many delegates you get, up through March 15th. But then on March 15th, it goes to a winner-takes-all system. And the reason they do that is to give those early states more of an influence and also to make sure that the later states, which are the bigger states, which have larger populations of people, get the focus and attention that they deserve. So that if someone someone won Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, whatever, they didn't have now 200 delegates. They have 15 or 30. So that the larger states with larger populations get their due. So after March 15th, all of those primaries and caucuses will have a winner-take-all system where whoever wins the majority of the vote, or not even a majority in this case because it could be 30% is the most, whoever wins the vote will take all of the delegates from that state in the Republican Party.
Yeah.
So we don't do it that way. We do strictly proportional on the Democratic side, but the Republicans have changed the way that they've done it. So
do we know which states in particular are doing that? I think it's the smaller states, right?
Well, it's just any state that's after March 15th.
After March 15th. Yeah.
So there's really big ones. There's California, there's New York, there's Texas. Texas is Super Tuesday, I guess. But yeah, some really, really big states, which is, again, about winnowing, right? Is about knocking people out so that it comes down to one or two candidates instead of eight so that, you know, they can have a winner and that they don't have a contested convention.
Well, so March 16th is the cutoff, right?
15th.
15th.
Yeah, everything after. So after March 14th, starting on March 15th is when they do a winner-take-all system.
I think Jeb is out by then.
Me too.
Carson is out by then.
Me too.
Kasich, he will have to do fairly well in the next few to hang in.
Yeah.
but because when does Ohio go? Because he'll do well in Ohio, but I think Ohio is like the eighth for them.
So it'll still be proportional.
Right.
So even if he does really well in Ohio, he'll still only take...
I don't think Kasich is going to do all that great in the South.
20-30%. I agree.
So, but between Trump, Rubio, and Cruz, those guys aren't going anywhere.
No. Agreed.
So it's going to be at least these four with maybe a Rubio hanging on. Kasich hanging on.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't know when we're going to get to this just two-man race.
I mean, I don't know either. It depends on if it's winner take all after March 14th, and there's a bunch of primaries March 15th with a huge number of delegates. Whoever wins those, unless it's split, unless, you know, Trump takes a big one and then Rubio takes a big one and Cruz takes a big one and they're kind of just on that level playing field.
It's going to take a big one right on Jeff's head.
Gross.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, unless they split it, whoever wins the majority of those is going to be the...
nominee.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we know Trump isn't going to bow out no matter what.
No.
And Rubio isn't because he's going to have a huge war chest.
Yes.
Including probably...
Especially once Jeb's out.
Koch brothers money,
yep,
and Sheldon Adelson money,
yep,
and all of Jeb Bush's donors money. And
yep,
Cruz has got a big war chest too, and he should keep that going.
Evangelicals, yeah.
Unless he just falls apart for some reason. But
which I don't see happening.
I don't see happening either, especially because his campaign is going to play the dirtiest pool imaginable, which works on the Republican side.
Yeah, it does.
Much as they like to pretend it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, these commentators and strategists go on MSNBC and CNN and cry about how awful it is. It's, hey man, it's your people.
Yep.
And it works.
It works.
I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
It sort of kind of works sometimes on the Democrat side too, but not like they do it on the Republican side.
Yeah, agreed.
Nobody's sending robocalls about illegitimate black babies on the Democratic
side. No. Okay. The worst we get is Clinton being like, he's not really even a Democrat. I mean, that's the meanest.
It can get a little worse than that. It got worse than that in 2008.
It did.
There were some icky things that happened.
It did. You're right. But not like illegitimate black babies.
No, that's a Republican specialty right there.
Yes.
And I'm sure they'll go that route.
Or Swift Boat against John Kerry or whatever. Yeah.
You know, and it's been, I wrote about this on Daily Coast, it's been mostly kid gloves on Trump. I mean, they're just starting now to dig into some stuff, but there's way more on Trump.
Oh my God.
They haven't touched the rape allegation from the ex-wife.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't touched all his philandering.
Yeah.
The front pages of Marla Maples saying that Trump was the best lay she ever had or whatever.
Gross.
Or maybe it was the other way around. Maybe he was saying it about her.
I don't know.
But either
That's
way,
disgusting.
It's projectile vomit inducing.
Yes.
Either way.
Yes.
Either way. There's the countless Howard Stern interviews where he says all kinds of ridiculous, horrible things.
Crazy shit, yeah.
I mean, you know, they've just started poking at him a little bit, just waiting for him to self-implode.
Which is so interesting.
Which is smart, right?
I mean, I guess. He's doing really well, so I would have hit him before now. Especially with this stuff, I'm very pro-life, and I donated money to Hillary Clinton, and he was not a conservative. And
but that's not the stuff that's I think put any kind of dent in him. I think it's been attacking the Pope, maybe, but we don't know that yet.
Yeah,
And it's not going to hurt him in South Carolina because there's not that many Catholics.
No,
but you get into New York and Pennsylvania and New Jersey and the Northeast,
absolutely,
and Massachusetts, and there's
and the Midwest.
In the Midwest.
You know, Kansas and...
There's plenty of Catholics there, too,
yeah,
sure. But
absolutely.
Like the South now, it's
no,
Southern Baptist, Protestants,
exactly.
Evangelicals.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of Catholics in Texas, too, but there's a lot more Baptists and...
Yeah. In Florida?
In Florida, there's a lot of Catholics. The Hispanics are all Catholic.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah.
In Central and North Florida, it's more Southern Baptist and some others, but... A lot of Catholics in Florida, too, so.
All right.
I don't imagine Trump doing that great in Florida anyway, but his last poll, he was doing really well there.
I mean, Florida's full of crazy people, and he's one of them.
That's true.
Do you know? Like, he's definitely
their
people.
But it'll be
people.
Rubio.
Well, right. Rubio and Bush are both from there, so you'd think that one of them would pull it out, but.
I think Bush, you know what's interesting about Bush? He's been so weak that I don't even think he gets vice president consideration.
No.
Florida
oh,
and
God,
all.
No. No, I don't either. I think Rubio might. if he doesn't win, oh, I think Rubio, he would, definitely. Because he could maybe Rubio help them take Kasich. Florida. Right. Rubio and Kasich's Ohio. Those are the two big ones that they need.
Yeah.
And you've got the governor and a senator from one of those states. So I think it's either Kasich or Rubio. Shortlist.
Rubio yeah. makes a lot of sense to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, totally. Especially because he's kind of green, kind of new, could use a little bit of polish. He's Hispanic. He's from Florida. He's yeah. young.
So Trump hasn't burned all the Rubio bridges yet, but as if it's Trump, he certainly burned the Cruz bridges. I can't yeah. imagine them working together
no way.
In any way, shape,
no
or form.
No way.
That's about going to wrap it up. So we are going to be live streaming tomorrow. Go to our YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube and look up Irreverent Testimony, and you will see the link to the live stream. We'll be on and off doing it as we please. If you can't catch that, which I can't imagine why you wouldn't want to watch it.
Come on, take your Saturday and watch us talk.
Watch us talk. No, if you happen to be home and want to see the primary and caucus results, then, you know, do that. Otherwise, we'll have it up as a podcast later that night or Sunday morning.
Yeah.
And then we'll be back. We got a whole bunch of stuff in the pipeline. We got guests lined up. We got yep. things to talk about.
We sure do.
We're going to be talking about, obviously, we keep threatening to talk about the Supreme Court. We're yes. going to do that. Yes. And obviously, there's plenty to talk about that. We haven't even got to that. We're talking about human trafficking with yes. a friend of ours.
Yes.
Who's very passionate about
Shout
that.
Shout out to Molly.
We're going to be talking about a whole bunch of other stuff. And then we have our local campaign here to remove Joanne Wynholtz is still going. And we're, any day now, we're going to be announcing a date for our big rally demonstration at the Capitol where yes. we're going to have some speakers from hopefully Planned Parenthood, NARAL, Emily's List, and some regular folks too, just to talk about their experience in accessing Planned Parenthood and contraceptive services, which are continually under attack.
Yep.
As I stated on Daily Coast the other day, where Matt Bevin is now suing Planned Parenthood. They did kind of a bait and switch where we have these new laws coming and they said, okay, no, we'll grandfather you in, and then we'll have to do an inspection, and then you can get this license. And then Bevin turns around and says, you're in violation, so we're suing you. Mm. Really nasty, dirty trick that he's trying to pull there. And ultimately, I think he'll lose, but that just goes to show we were percentage points away from losing Hickenlooper here to Beaupre, who's
yes.
the same kind of guy, and we'd be looking at the same kind of crap because people just sat on their asses and did not go out and vote. So
yep.
stay involved, guys. I don't care how pissed off you're going to be that Bernie isn't the guy. If he's not the guy, you have got to be involved.
Yep.
There's so much at stake. So I know I'm preaching to most of the choir, but spread the word about that.
Yeah, please.
Okay?
Yep.
So find us tomorrow. Listen to the podcast later. As usual, I've been Travis.
I'm Rachel.
Stay tuned, stay active, stay involved, and buenos nachos. Night.
I think often is nothing but a coffin. Gotta get ready.